We are going to talk about calories this hour. That's right, calories. The science of calories and the politics of calories. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, April the 4th. What's political about a calorie, you might ask? Well, lots, as we will discuss. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you would like to get in our conversation about calories with our guest, who is a nutritionist, a professor, and an author, Marion Nessel. Her latest book is Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And we wonder if you count calories and whether you're curious about calories and whether all calories are created equal and why they matter. Let me welcome in our guest. Marion Nessel is author of Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. She's a professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and a professor of sociology at New York University. Her other books include What to Eat and Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. And she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So why did you decide to write a whole book on calories?
Well, actually, I was invited to do it by my editor at University of California Press, and the minute he suggested it, it just seemed like a terrific idea. I knew that no such book existed, and it was perfectly obvious that people are really confused about calories. There's a lot of misinformation about them, and they have a lot to do with people's weight. And then they're very, very hard to understand. You can't see them, taste them, smell them, or feel them. And the only way you know what they do is if you're weighing yourself on a scale.
Mm-hmm.
So for most people, they're just completely baffling.
Yeah, and why do they matter?
They matter because they're a measure of energy, and the energy in food is what keeps you going. And if you have too much of it, it's what makes you put on weight.
Yeah, well, I have been a calorie counter, sort of. I don't actually look at every calorie in every item I eat, but when we count calories, we're trying to limit our intake of calories so we maintain our weight. Exactly what am I counting?
Well, what you're counting is the amount of energy that's in food. The definition of a calorie, which itself is almost incomprehensible, is the amount of heat that is required to bring a kilogram of water, raise the temperature of a kilogram of water by 1 degree centigrade under certain conditions of atmosphere and pressure.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Everybody knows that. I mean, I have to think twice about remembering it. And actually, that's a calorie that's on food labels, which is 1,000 times higher than the chemist calorie. So you have one word calorie that actually means two completely different things, a thousand times bigger than the other. So that's complicated too. But we're going to talk about the calories on food labels because that's what we're dealing with. And the easiest way that I can think of to explain it in terms that people understand is that 100 calories, which is the amount in two Oreo cookies, for example, contains enough energy, if it were burned under appropriate conditions, to bring a quart of water to the boiling point. That's a lot of heat.
Yeah, it is. But why is it that I can eat those two cookies and gain 100 calories, but it takes me, I don't know, hours and hours of the treadmill to burn it off?
Oh, yeah, it's one of the unfortunate things about calories, that and the fact that you need fewer and fewer of them as you get older, which I think is the dirtiest trick in the world.
Yeah.
If you're trying to lose weight, it's very, very difficult to do it because you have to do so much physical activity to burn it off. The use of calories is very efficient in the body. And if you look at it from a physiological standpoint, the entire system is set up to keep us from losing weight. It's very, very important to have enough glucose, blood sugar, to keep our brains active. That's what the brain uses as fuel. And the entire regulatory system for hunger and satiety and body weight is set up to make us eat more, to make sure that we don't lose any weight so that we have enough fuel for our brain.
Oh. Well, are all calories created equal, or are all calories the same? I guess what I'm getting at is if I, well, I did, you know, let's say I ate a donut this morning. And is that the same? Are those calories the same as if I would have had a healthy bowl of oatmeal, say?
Yeah, from the standpoint of weight, yes. From the standpoint of health, no. And that's part of what makes the whole business about calories so complicated. The body doesn't really care where the calories come from an energetic standpoint. What it does care about, from the standpoint of health, is whether there are nutrients, fiber, and other kinds of things with it. And it's much, much easier to control weight if you're eating healthier foods because they tend to be lower in calories. So if you're eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, they have water in them. A lot of the calories are diluted. You're not going to be eating as much. And one of the things that makes it so difficult to do the science on body weight and weight loss is that it's difficult to count calories accurately. And the difference between estimating them, which is what you're doing, and measuring them is really quite enormous. It's very, very hard to estimate calories accurately.
Oh, well, I guess what I was doing is I actually follow more of a Weight Watchers type of a program, mm-hmm. where it's controlling portion size and allotting points for certain types of foods, rather than actually count every individual calorie in every individual piece of food.
Well, you couldn't count the calories. I mean, the physiology is complicated, and you can't tell by looking at a food how many calories it has. At least I certainly can't. I mean, I really found calorie labeling in fast food places to be revelatory. I was just completely shocked at how many calories those foods contained, especially at the beginning when calorie labeling started in New York City. And I live in an area around the university that has lots and lots of fast food places. I just went through, and I couldn't believe that a cookie in one of those places was 670 calories.
Well, now we're getting political too, aren't we?
Well, I don't think you can avoid getting political. I mean, if from a public health standpoint, the two most important things about calories are having too few of them and having too many. And billions of people are affected by both of those. And the minute you get into that, you're getting into public health problems and ways in which governments are dealing with those problems, and you're in the realm of politics. Can't stay out of it.
Right, and I meant it was sort of a transition into that, because your book is about the science and the politics of calories, and labeling foods or at restaurants and putting their calorie counts up has been a political battle of sorts. And I wonder if you just has that changed our eating habits at all? If we know how many calories might be in that that cookie or that shake, are we going to avoid it?
Well, it depends on who you are. It certainly has changed my behavior. I didn't buy that cookie. Or if I was going to buy it, I was going to split it with three friends. But the research that's been done on the New York City experiment shows on average very, very little change in purchasing behavior by people who go into those places. But if they single out the sector of people who actually look at the calories and pay attention to them, it does have an effect on their behavior. And I know people who were just aghast when they realized how many calories were in their morning bagel or their morning or their morning latte or whatever. They just had no idea, because calories are invisible. You can't see them.
Yeah. Well, what do you hope to... Go ahead.
I think it's useful. I just think calorie labeling is useful, at least for people who use it.
Yeah. What about food labels? Do you think, in terms of calories, are those labels adequate, or do they need to have more information about those calories? Do you have a problem with food labels?
Well, I do, because when the food label was devised in the late 1980s, going into the early 1990s, when the FDA was working on the food label, obesity wasn't as much of a problem as it is now. It hadn't been recognized to the extent that it is now. And so the food labels were much more worried about fat than they were about calories. And now when we know that calories are so important as a factor in body weight, the labels need to be made more prominent in a way that explains the calories better. Right now, the calories are per serving size. And right away, you're getting into mathematics because you've got to figure out what a serving size is. It's usually in grams, which most people don't understand. And you have to figure out how many servings there are in the package, and then figure out how many calories you're eating. If you eat more if you eat more servings, you're going to get more calories. And in fact, if I had one thing that I could teach everybody in the world, it would be that larger portions have more calories.
Yeah, I laugh so many times because a label might say, you know, whatever, 100 calories per serving, and I'll think, oh, that's pretty good, and then I'll realize that that itty bitty bag has 4 servings in it.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Or that tiny bag is considered to be 4 servings, or that the one that I happen to be a great lover of, ice cream and frozen yogurt, and a half a cup is considered a serving. That's laughable.
No way.
Yeah, that's just laughable. That's not the way people eat, at least certainly. Excuse me. It's not the way I eat. Let me not accuse others of doing what I'm doing. But it's certainly not the way I eat. And if you eat 2 half cups, you've got to multiply the calories by 2. Mm-hmm. And for many people, that's just not intuitively obvious. In fact, there's plenty of evidence that recognition of portion size is not intuitively obvious, and that everybody eats more when presented with larger portions.
Let me take a caller who has a question or a comment about labels. Becky in Toma. Hi, Becky.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. You guys kind of covered what I had called about, and that was kind of the confusion about labeling. Lately, I've been trying to lose weight, so I'm using a phone app to check all of my calories and track everything that I consume throughout the day. And for those folks who really don't pay that much attention or think that they could just look at the label, they probably don't realize they're eating as much as they are, because a lot of things are, confusing for folks. Like you said, you go to eat a package of chips or something and it's 1.5 servings instead of 1, or a bottle of soda is 2.5, or a cup of even Raisin Bran or a serving is 3/4 cup, and I eat a bowl of cereal, it's usually probably twice or 2.5 times what the label says.
Yeah, why is it this way, Marion Nestle, do you think?
Well, the FDA in 1993, when it wrote these rules, had elaborate, the rules for what's on food labels take up about 700 pages in the Federal Register in very, very small type. And you can go and look at the kind of thinking that went into it. They were responding to comments. They were responding to the concerns of manufacturers. I think cereals are the most difficult example, because there are serving sizes of cereal that are 1/2 cup, 3/4 cup, 1 cup, 1 1/4 cups, 1 1/3 cups. And I don't know how many people remember fractions, but you sure needed to pay attention to fractions when you were in grammar school if you want to understand these things.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you, Becky. We're with you. So the FDA also has decided that that I should eat to 2,000 calories a day, or where did that 2,000 calories a day come from?
Well, there again, you go back to that 1993 Federal Register to read what the thinking was that went into it. The dietary surveys of the years before the FDA Federal Register notice, so we're talking about 1970s, 1980s, reported that people on average consumed 2,350 calories a day. 2,350 on average. That was men and women. And the FDA wanted to use 2,350 as the standard for figuring out how many calories were related to your total dietary intake. And everybody said, you can't do that. The number's too complicated. Nobody will be able to make any sense of it. So they rounded it off to 2,000. And we now know that 2,000 is way, way, way below what people are actually eating, as shown by not only surveys in which people are asked how much they eat, but also actual measurements of what people are eating. And these are much, much higher than 2,000, usually 400 or 500 calories different. People eat more than 2,000 calories.
Right. I was going to say, and if you are trying to lose weight, you really probably don't want to have even 2,000 calories. I mean, otherwise, because if you have 2,000 calories and you don't exercise enough and you're gaining weight, that's too many calories for you.
Well, if 2,000 calories is less than what you need to maintain your body weight, you'll lose weight on a 2,000-calorie diet. There certainly was a time in my life when I would lose weight on 2,000 calories. I'm not sure that's true now. So it really depends on the individual, how big you are, how active you are, how lucky you are genetically, and how your metabolism works.
True. I guess I'm often thinking that people who are on weight loss diets are usually 1,800 calories or even less than that.
I think they would have to be, and that's hard for people to maintain over a long period of time because our physiological regulatory system is set up to encourage us to eat more, not less.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very good at encouraging people to pile on the calories, but not nearly as good at telling people when to stop.
We are talking with Marion Nessel. Her latest book is Why Calories Count: From Science to Politics. And if you have a question about calories, I hope you'll call us. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you pay attention to calories? Do you count calories? Do you think that it should be easier for you to be able to figure out how many calories to take in? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Tomorrow at this time, I'm going to be talking with a guest who is an enthusiast about vintage recipes. We'll talk about recreating the dishes we grew up with tomorrow at this time. Right now we are talking about the calories in that food. Our guest is Marion Nessel. She is author of Why Calories Count: From Science to Politics. She's also a professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and a professor of sociology at New York University. And we have full lines, so let me go to the phones and see what our listeners want to ask. Jared in Milwaukee is with us next. Hello, Jared.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about some diet foods, Splenda or sucralose or any of those kind of like stevia. How do they determine that those are actually zero-calorie things, even though I would imagine chemistry-wise you could burn those molecules and they would give you heat?
Interesting, yeah. How does that work, Marion Nessel?
Oh, they're chemicals that are constructed in ways that digestive molecules don't affect them. So either they are excreted and are not absorbed into the intestine, so they have zero calories because they never get into the parts of the body where metabolism takes place, or they get into the body and are not metabolized and are excreted in urine. So it's one or the other, or they have so few calories that they hardly count as anything. I believe stevia has a couple, but not many, and they've measured that. So those are calorie-free. I don't like the way they taste, but I much prefer sugar, just in moderation, of course.
Yeah. How do our bodies use calories? We didn't really get into that.
Oh, no, we didn't get into it because it's enormously complicated. The food molecules contain energy in energy is stored in the bonds of that hold food molecules together. That's proteins, fats, and carbohydrates only, and also alcohol, unfortunately, mm-hmm. has calories. Vitamins and minerals don't, or at least not enough to pay any attention to. And these molecules are split into smaller and smaller pieces by enzymes in the body. And as those, the splitting releases energy in the form of heat, and that energy is stored in molecules that can then be used to power chemical reactions in the body. It's enormously complicated, mm-hmm. But it's been very, very well studied, and biochemists know how it works and have it completely computed, and that's been known for quite a long time.
Well, how do excess calories turn into my belly?
Well, the excess calories are, the energy is stored in molecules in the body, and then these molecules take the extra amounts of, we have lots and lots of building blocks for fat, protein, and carbohydrate in our body. And this energy is used to take the excess and convert them into fat, which is then stored in places where we would prefer not to have it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And why is it so much easier for me to gain weight than it is to lose it?
Well, I think if you just do the energetics on it, it's pretty easy to see that. So we have these two Oreo cookies. It's only 100 calories. But in order to use those 100 calories in a way that compensates for them, you have to walk for a mile. Roughly, heavier people get more calories per mile, and lighter people have to walk further. But roughly, I mean, that's sort of a rule of thumb. It takes a mile to walk off every 100 calories.
Thanks, Jared, for the call. Next, we go to Cora in Hurley. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm finding this conversation very interesting. Most of my life, I had a very rapid metabolism, also a high amount of energy. And, I used to have to go out in the forest, cut my own wood, haul water, things like that. And because it took so much more work just to live, I didn't sit down and eat. I ate most of my meals in the car. So I was eating things that were portable, nuts and fruit and vegetables and things like that. And I was able to maintain my weight. Then I had an injury that totally changed my life, and also in combination with aging. I was in my mid-40s when I had the injury. And after that, I started gaining weight. And we all know a sedentary lifestyle isn't good. And one of the things that comes into play with calories is that our lives as we live nowadays promote a sedentary lifestyle. You go to work, you sit down. Kids go to school, they sit down. You get home, you sit down to relax. Kids are playing on handheld devices and things like that. We don't go out and play anymore.
Right.
When you look at the food pyramid and you look at like 2,000 calories a day, if you're really eating according to the food pyramid, you don't have time to eat all that food in one day.
Well, and maybe, yeah, so
what I had to do now is I eat six small meals a day.
Right. Are you saying, Cora, though, that you said that you're having when you had your injury and got older, you started having problems with excess weight?
Yes.
Yeah.
And according to other people, I'm not overweight, but I'm overweight for what I'm comfortable with. You know, I expect to be fit.
Right.
And to be healthy. And I found a program on the internet called Fit Day, which is a really great, if you want to count calories. I'm not so much a calorie counter as I am keeping track and making myself accountable. But you can put any food in there, and it'll tell you, you put in how many ounces or how much you ate, and it tracks all day how many calories that you consumed, how much fat, protein, carbohydrates. And also you put in how much exercise you did, what kind of exercise you did. And it's a great reminder to keep yourself accountable. You know, and we also live in a society that says you deserve a break today. You know, go out to McDonald's.
Yeah. So I don't know. Cora, I appreciate the call, but is there a bottom line for that you'd like our guest to address?
The calorie counts, I think, are really important. You know, it didn't say whose body or what age or what kind of lifestyle that those calorie counts are based on.
Right. And all that's important, isn't it, Marion Nestle?
Oh, it's enormously important. As I keep saying, one of the dirtiest tricks about getting older is your metabolism drops and you just don't need as many calories as you did when you were younger, but you're used to eating the same amount of food and weight piles on, and it is extraordinarily difficult for a lot of people to get off. But one of the things I picked up in that comment that I thought was really important was how hard a time the caller had dealing with the food environment. And one of the things we talk about in this book, and because I think it's so important for people to understand, is that everything in the food environment conspires to get you to eat more, not less. We live in a country in which food is abundant, and it is everywhere. I love to ask the question, when did it become okay to eat in bookstores? Food is everywhere. There's food in drugstores. Every drugstore in Manhattan is now a grocery store, as far as I can tell. There's food in there's food in clothing stores. And if it's there, the research shows that the closer it is to you, the more you'll eat of it.
That's funny, yeah, because notice in a clothing store, like, you know, chocolate bars at the checkout counter. You know,
exactly.
But why are we being encouraged to eat everywhere we go or to buy food everywhere we go? Who's behind this conspiracy?
Well, conspiracy is probably too strong a word, because it's actually just a product of the normal course of doing business in our society. We have an enormous overabundance of food in this country. We went, for example, in the 1980s from having an average of 3,200 calories available in the food supply for every man, woman, and child to the present 3,900 or 4,000 calories, which is twice the FDA's amount that you're supposed to have in a day. So food companies have to sell food in an extraordinarily competitive environment, and they not only have to make a profit, but Wall Street expects them to grow their profits every 90 days. And in order to meet those kinds of expectations, food companies have had to find new ways to sell products and new audiences for their products. And so I think that accounts for the proliferation of food in places where it never used to be. And we now have tons of research that shows that people eat more calories if food is closer to them, if it's more available, if it's in larger portions, and for many people, if they eat more often during the day.
Let's another call from Richard in La Crosse. Hi, Richard.
Hello, ma'am. I'm a first-time caller. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about calories?
My question has to do with calculations in the weight room and whether or not there is an equation as far as, like, if you're doing curls, say, with free weights, the calculation to see how many calories you're burning based on how heavy the weight is and how many repetitions you plan on doing?
Is there a calculation?
Oh, there is a calculation, and it also depends on how heavy you are and how big you are and how old you are. All of those are factors that go into determining how many calories you're going to be using in any particular activity. What the formulas are for those machines, I have no idea. I've seen them. I don't think they're very accurate, at least the ones that I've seen. They tend to be very reassuring about the number of calories you're expending. I've used the running machines, and I'm kind of amazed at the amount of calories that they say you're expending in what seems to me to be not very much activity. We have charts in our book that have been done on the basis of measurements of actual expenditure as opposed to estimations. The machines are an estimation. They're not a measure. And there's a big difference.
So is there any advice you can give people who want to eat the adequate amount of calories to maintain their weight, or if they want to lose or gain weight? I mean, what should we do to really kind of figure out the calories in, calories out formulas?
Well, you have to get a scale. I don't know any other way to do it. You get a common household scale and weigh yourself at regular intervals. If you're gaining weight, you're eating too much. If you're losing weight, you're not eating enough. And if your weight stays roughly the same within a few pounds over a long period of time, then you're doing just fine and can stop worrying about it.
Mm-hmm. So is this something that we just should do as individuals, or do you think that our government can help us along these lines?
Well, I think there's lots of things the government could do to be helpful that it's not doing. And part of the reason why it's not doing it is that the food industry opposes it so much. I think, for one thing, we should put some restrictions on marketing junk foods to children. That would help a lot. And a lot of restrictions. I mean, stop it on television and get marketing out of the schools and stop trying to push kids to think that eating fast food and drinking sodas is a normal way for children to be eating when it really didn't used to be. For individuals, it would be nice if it were easier to be more active in cities. Many people find it, I live in an office building, for example, where the stairs are so scary that I don't ever want to take them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a place I would walk up and down the stairs. My office is only on the fifth floor, and I would walk up and down the stairs if they weren't so absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, I know what you mean there. Do you like the new food pyramid? Is that an accurate reflection of the way we should be eating?
You mean the plate?
Oh, sorry, it's not the food pyramid anymore. That's right.
It's not the pyramid. No, I like the old pyramid going way back to the 1990s. The plate is, I don't know. It depends on what size plate it is, and the big flaw in it seems to me, is that plate size have gotten so big, so that depending on what size plate you use, the plate, by the way, is divided into sectors. One for fruits and vegetables, and one for fruits, one for vegetables, one for grains, and one for the one that they annoyingly call protein. And what annoys me about that is that there's protein in grains and dairy products and other kinds of things. So that's kind of using a nutrition instead of a food designation. But how many calories you get out of that depends on how big the plate is,
right,
and how much you pile onto it. And portion sizes have grown since the early 1980s. I had a doctoral student at NYU who did that, who studied that as part of her doctoral work, and she was able to show that large size portions were introduced beginning in the early 1980s, and they've just gotten larger and larger and larger over the years. The easiest example that I can think of is I remember when muffins were 2 ounces. And now they're 6 or 7 ounces. Well, if they're 6 or 7 ounces, they're going to be have three times the calories that were in the old muffins. It's no wonder that people are gaining weight. They're eating more.
We are talking with Marion Nestle. She is author of Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And we're talking about the science of calories, the politics of calories, talking about trying to understand how many calories we take in and how we expend them. And we're welcoming your questions and your own experiences. Does the number of calories in a food or product affect your buying decisions? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. After 10, Kathleen's guest will recount the 1968 baseball season as it occurred during one of the most divisive times in American history. That's coming up after 10. We're talking with Marion Nestle. She is the author of Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And our next caller is Eric in Milwaukee. Hello, Eric.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have such a wonderful show.
Well, thank you for calling.
My question is regarding something I've read called The Chemical Calorie. I think it was by Dr. Hamilton Braille, and where she discusses how the pesticides, herbicides, and other chemicals introduced into our food interfere with our metabolism processing calories, and as a result, we don't burn calories as efficiently as our system is designed to do so. And I was hoping that our guest could discuss that.
Okay, in a little bit of a weak telephone line, but it was someone
who,
yeah, did. Okay, just so the listeners heard it too. Chemical calories. Do pesticides and herbicides affect our metabolism?
Yeah, this is an intriguing new area of research on what are called obesogens. These are chemicals in the environment that a lot of people are now doing some research to try to see whether they're responsible for rising rates of obesity and the problems that people have dealing with overweight. They could have something to do with it, but I don't think you need complicated chemical explanations to explain why people are gaining weight. People are gaining weight because they're eating more food now than they used to, and there's loads and loads of evidence to demonstrate that. But I'm going to keep an eye on the obesogen theories because I think they're kind of intriguing. And I'm concerned about chemicals in the food supply and wish they would go away. And maybe this will be a good reason to try to get rid of them.
Is sugar one of these obesogens?
Oh, yes. Sugar has calories, so it's part of that. And a lot of people are doing a lot of work to try to demonstrate that sugar is responsible for obesity, and it could be. I mean, I'm certainly not somebody who's going to argue against advice to eat less sugar. I think we eat far, far too much. I think the last estimate I saw was that the average American consumes 400 calories a day from sugars alone. That seems like a lot to me on average. I mean, if that's the average, and there are lots of people who are consuming a great deal more, and 400 calories from sugars, that's a lot. So I think we would all be better off if we were eating fewer sugars in our foods. Not that I know that some people think that sugar is poison. I don't. I think sugar has a place in healthy diets, and I wouldn't want to give it up, but more is not better, and less is.
We have an open line for you if you have a question about food, diet, weight gain, calories. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Marion Nestle. She is a nutritionist. She's a professor, and she is an author. Her latest book is Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And our next caller is Bruce in West Milwaukee. Hello, Bruce.
Good morning, folks. I'm wondering about digestive enzymes and whether they actually do help one burn calories. Are they necessary as one ages, or are they destroyed in the stomach, and is it just a gimmick, particularly the enzyme lipase for burning of fat?
Are you talking about supplements of enzymes?
Yes.
Ah, because your digestive enzymes do the job pretty well, and they still work in... As people get older, unless you're someone who's taking a lot of medications that might interfere with digestive enzymes in some way. That's one of the reasons why there's so much concern about vitamin B12 in elderly people, because the enzymes that use it sometimes are interfered with by medications that people take. But I don't advise enzyme supplements for anybody, unless your doctor has some particular reason to prescribe them for you for some particular problem. I'm not sure that they're very helpful.
Thank you very much. Bruce, did you have a follow-up?
Yes. Are they destroyed in the stomach, or is it just a gimmick?
Enzymes are proteins, and they ought to be destroyed by stomach acids. They ought to be inactivated by stomach acids and destroyed by other enzymes that break down proteins. I would think they would be. But I do believe they have some of it gets through and might have some effect. But I'm not really sure. I just don't think it's a very sensible idea.
So bottom line, though, I shouldn't get a food enzyme supplement thinking it's going to help me lose weight.
Oh, I don't think so. No.
All right, Bruce, thanks very much for the call. Stephen Madison says, all calories are not treated equally in the body. What about how different kinds of calories are metabolized? What about the glycemic index of foods?
Okay, we're talking about two different things here. On the one hand, we're talking about calories, which are a measure of the energy value of food. And on the other, we're talking about the quality of the food that is being consumed. The glycemic index refers to the effects of sugars and rapidly absorbable carbohydrates on blood sugar levels. And the idea is that if you consume foods of low glycemic index, meaning low in sugars and refined carbohydrates, your metabolism will work better. You won't have spikes of insulin that are caused by high blood sugar levels, and you won't have as much trouble maintaining your weight. I think there's some truth to that, particularly because foods that have a low glycemic index are those that are generally lower in calories.
And what about the Atkins diet, the high protein, high fat, low carb diet, being better than, say, another diet?
Well, better for what is the question. I assume you mean weight loss over a long period of time. There's no question that the Atkins diet works better on immediate weight loss, because you begin to excrete a lot of water if you're not taking in carbohydrates, and that water loss occurs almost immediately, and so you find yourself losing a couple of pounds within just a few days. That's very reassuring. What's been seen in the long-term studies is that the Atkins diet works very, very well for about 6 months or so, as do most diets, as it turns out. And then people start to regain the weight. It's very, very hard for people to maintain extreme diets of one kind or another for a very long period of time. And most of the weight loss studies, because they're so hard to do in people who are free living, you know, that is out and going about their daily activities, they just don't last long enough to see what the long-term effects of these diets are. And the studies that have gone on the longest show that it really doesn't matter what the composition of the diet is. People will lose weight at the same rate depending on what their calorie deficit is.
Let me take Jason in Chippewa Falls now. Hi, Jason.
Hi. One of the things I've been doing kind of to cut calories is to switch to diets. So soda, and it's kind of, I'm also on the Atkins diet, so it kind of fills in my sweet tooth. And I'm just kind of wondering, is the pluses and minuses of that, or is it, you know, everyone says to just cut it out completely, but it kind of, it helps me because it gets rid of that sweet tooth, like I said.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
And also, just might I add, there are some who say that even the diet soda might, that sweet tooth that Jason is satisfying there, that that might make us want to eat more calories and eat more food down the road because of we're satiating that sweet tooth.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing, Joy. And the and there's some preliminary evidence that suggests that. I don't use anything with artificial sweeteners in it because it, I have some rules about eating, and one of them is never eat anything artificial because you're never sure about what your body does with it. But and I don't like the taste of artificial sweeteners. But there is this preliminary evidence that suggests that artificial sweeteners heighten the desire for sweet and therefore the desire for sugar, and that eventually people succumb to it and over a period of time. So I mean, what seems to me to be the most reasonable approach to diet is to eat a healthy diet and one that contains a variety of all kinds of foods and just try to figure out a way not to eat so much of it.
Right. But bottom line, if Jason was downing several sugar Cokes a day and switched to Diet Coke, is he better off or not?
Well, it depends on how he's compensating on the rest of his diet.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little evidence that artificial sweeteners are associated with weight loss. In fact, if you want to have some fun with bad epidemiology, you can draw curves of the increase in use of diet sweeteners and the increase in incidence and prevalence of obesity and show that they go up from the 1980s exactly in parallel. And if you're a bad epidemiologist, you say, maybe artificial sweeteners cause obesity. Well, of course they don't. But they don't, they're not associated with any much help in doing something about it, except perhaps in some individuals like Jason. I don't know.
Well, we have so many callers and not very much time. I did want, you know, the main advice that you give in the book is eat less, eat better, move more, get political. What do you hope is the book's main takeaway?
Well, I hope that people will understand that how much they eat really matters to how much they weigh, and that, and I would say that would be point one. Point two is how hard it is to manage the food environment, which does everything it can to present you with delicious, wonderful food at every opportunity. And it's a management problem that people have to figure out how to manage for themselves. And on the political side, it would be great if the government could do some things that would make it easier to eat more healthfully and to make more healthful choices.
Yeah, and with our final few minutes here, what might be the first thing the government should do to make it easier to eat more healthy?
Well, I have a great big long list, starting with doing something about putting some restrictions on marketing to children, better food labels, support for growing fruits and vegetables. Right now, our agricultural support system does nothing whatsoever, or so little that it just hardly counts, to do anything to promote fruit and vegetable production. And it would be nice if fruits and vegetables could be more prevalent, easier to come by, and cheaper for people who have problems affording them. Those are, I think, the main ones to start with, and then healthy lunches in schools.
No, we will leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Marion Nessel is author of Why Calories Count: From Science to Politics. She's a professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health and Sociology at New York University. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for producing this program. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air direction. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. And I hope you join us tomorrow at this time when we talk about vintage recipes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.